Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And welcome to the AEW Dynasty Preview. We are the Dudley Boys of What Culture. I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to look ahead to this weekend's AEW Dynasty pay-per-view. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite and AEW Collision, but also Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete. A little bit of a quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to look ahead to Dynasty this weekend. And Sidgwick, with all the negativity around the weekly product, this looks like a great card.
I thought you were doing a bit there.
No.
We did the look. It's because I think whenever he talks about AEW, it's quite insincere. So we just had Adam Wilborn is about to do a joke voice. For Christ's sake, this is a show that's got Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay on it. Mm. Provided that it doesn't run too long.
Two more matches just been added.
Yeah, I know, I know. Provided it doesn't run too long, this has got every chance of being incredible. And one thing I'm trying to bear in mind, okay, is that I have been emotionally disconnected from AEW for the last 2 or 3 weeks. Catastrophic head loss with the CM Punk stuff. Haven't really done enough angle-wise to really hook me on Dynasty. It's a bit of a deflating drop from Revolution, which I was all kinds of into. It's just annoying. But one thing I'm trying to bear in mind, it's not just a case of, oh, the matches will be great on the night, is that there'll be something in every match that will make me lose my mind.
Yeah.
Because these are artists who are incredible. This could be argued as the most stacked roster of all time. It's not just that it'll be great. That'll be great in ways that our brains who aren't wrestlers can't conceive. I try and think of individual moments that I've watched on an AEW pay-per-view over the past 12 months and change and think, Christ almighty, you're brilliant at this. It should feel more like this. You should feel like you're this good on TV more often. Even something as simple as, remember when it was a four-way tag at one of the ones last year, it's quite disheartening to me that my recall kind of immediately identify the pay-per-view. Four-way ladder tag, and Malakai Black does this awesome, awesome, awesome spot where there's a ladder draped against the ropes, and he just gets the rope, pulls it back with his arms, and that ladder just seems to fly as if by magic into someone's face. It's like, that's awesome. Kind of in character as well. Why do I never get that feeling on television that you're this kind of great wrestler? This will be great in a way that I think even looking at the card on paper will surprise people because that's how talented these acts are.
Yeah, with all the distractions we've alluded to there, it's the one consistent thing in AEW. They've been putting on brilliant matches throughout these troubled times.
Yeah, like, I don't think these times are anywhere near as troubled as, say, 2023. Mm-hmm. But in that period, they sort of perfected this, like unremarkable brilliance. That was like Tony Khan would go out and say, this is the best pay-per-view streak in wrestling history. And you sort of couldn't argue it match for match. But at the same time, you couldn't recall having many weeks of anticipation for any of it. There was a lot of the stories coming out of these amazing matches that you weren't hugely invested in. So it was all very in the moment. I'm watching the greatest thing I've ever seen, followed by weeks of, I don't care about it anymore. And that was this strange pattern that emerged with the AEW pay-per-views. And I guess, on paper at least, this looks like a continuation of that. It's not ideal, but at least the brilliance is still there. If this is, I use the new generation as an example, if you can hold on to this and hold on to your base, when the good times roll again, they will remember that it never stopped offering you this.
You say that it's not quite as doomy as it was last year. I think what's really annoyed me, I would kind of disagree with that statement, respectfully, of course, is that what's annoying for me is that I feel a little bit like a Mark who has, like, I don't know, not sacrificed any principles or anything as stupid or as OTT as that, but I bought into the resurgence,
yeah,
the comeback, the idea that the feeling was back, and then they've just got very petty and defensive and pissy and stupid and small fry about the CM Punk stuff. And then you look at some of the booking and you think, if I've been blinded by just a really good elite formation angle here, how many times you can fail, and they have failed last year, you only really get one shot of, oh, we're back and we're sorry. You know what I mean? Before the next time they do that, they've really only done it once.
Mm.
Restore the feeling. We've buggered this up. Mm-hmm. We're back. And then, you know, if they do enough to show, I've sort of met them halfway, I think, in retrospect, AEW, and thought, all right, okay, well, I believe that you're back now. If you bugger it up again, I won't believe you next time.
Yeah.
There's not an MJF to blame at the moment, is there?
No.
That's where everybody's heads went constantly last year. He's not around. So if it's not him, then you've, once again, as we said a lot last year, you've got to look upwards constantly. And it, ultimately, philosophically, this was and is Tony Khan's vision.
Yeah.
So sit with him. Any blame, any praise, it always goes to him in the end.
Let's run through the card then. 12 matches on the card, 9 on the main card. On 0, you've got Trent Barretta beating Matt Sydal. We're not even going to discuss that one. It's obvious he's going to win.
I'm going to discuss it very briefly, okay. Right? Okay. AEW produces 5 hours of television every single week. Every single week. Well, there's the odd week on which Collision doesn't air, okay? But more often than not, 5 hours per week, right? We get, always talk about, in good faith, how often storylines feel like they get put on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
Momentum gets dropped quite often with more than one act because that roster is so big. So I'm going to ask, right, why on the pre-show of a pay-per-view when there is a 5 years deep history of at least one match on these weekends suffering from a lack of heat where previously fans would have been interested in watching it, and it's just the length of the show, mm-hmm. people just will tap out. I was really, like, it's ROH, not AEW, but to use the most recent example, Shida Athena at Supercard, I was there in person, and you can feel it, like, oh, God, there's 2 more matches left. Whereas 4 hours before, one of those 2 matches that's left, same thing happened with a 3-way at Revolution. 4 hours before, that was one of the matches I was most looking forward to seeing. And then because you see so much, and because a lot of what you see goes a little bit too long, mm-hmm. you get to one of those matches that 5 hours ago you were buzzing to see, and you think, oh, God, this one before the main event, is it? Why, when that feeling has affected more than 3/4 of every AEW pay-per-view, and you've got 5 hours to accomplish giving Trent a win so he's got a little bit more credibility going into this program with Orange Cassidy, why does he have to do it on the pre-show of a pay-per-view? Is that not, like, both problems at once manifesting? Couldn't you just, like, resolve both problems by putting this on any TV show? Trent versus Matt Sydal, do you want Collision?
It's also frustrating. Yeah. Like, I think it's frustrating in that old-fashioned way of how we perceive pre-shows as well. Like,
I don't care about them.
Yeah, you're encouraged not to, or you're encouraged at least to think lesser of the matches on a pre-show than you are on a main card, because there's still, it's weird how even now, there's like a meritocracy between making it onto the pay-per-view, even if you're in the same building in front of the same crowd. And I can remember like a handful of, say, like big pre-show matches where you watched and then thought, should have been on the main card, that New Day Usos, Shield winning the belts. Like, not many, and that's the point. Is you
Death were Triangle, House of Black.
Yeah, the Eric Rowan.
Yeah.
Like, there are sort of a select few where you could make like a nice little playlist, and then that's out of hundreds of pay-per-views, right? This Trent turn is, like, I'm not doing a bit. Like, it's the most I've ever been interested in Best Friends. Now they've been ripped apart. Like, I think it's been a quite well-told story. And it's, what, like, in the guts of 5 years?
Yeah.
Of AEW, you tell the story all the time in Vegas. Best friends were second or third most overactive of the people judging on merchandise, like reactions, mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff. And you were already telling your audience, well, it's going to be lower card stuff. Trent's going to get a title match and probably lose. And then we move on. And he broke up a 5-year bond to lose a title match on an undercard of like a Rampage or something.
Cassidy's not a champion.
Well, he's not even got a belt anymore, is he? Mm. But he'll probably lose to Orange Cassidy and that'll be that.
Yeah.
Like if he was winning on TV and not making it to the pay-per-view, different story, but...
Speaking of Orange Cassidy, he's in action, tagging with Katsuyori Shibata against Shane Taylor and Lee Moriarty.
It's a collision match. I mean, it makes no difference to me. Full disclosure, I probably will not watch the pre-show. If I was a Yank, I would. As a Brit who has to get 4 hours of sleep in, if I'm lucky, to get any kind of sleep whatsoever before watching it live and then hoping in that window between my kids waking up and having to get ready for work and the show ending, hopefully get another hour or two there. This no stakes, pointless, could have happened on collision match is of no interest to me. If anything, it's an imposition on my time. And again, if you go to these buildings and you see these pre-show matches, they gobble up your time. They gobble up the fuel you need to stay awake and create an atmosphere. I've never even agreed, really, do I ever need to see one match on a pre-show, WWE, AEW, otherwise?
Taking them off WrestleMania.
Yeah.
They've taken them off WrestleMania.
They make no difference whatsoever. And in fact, for me, they only subtract.
This is babyish 50-50 booking because Shane Taylor promotion is going to win. They're going to pin Shibata because Shibata got pinned when he was with Lion Hook, so they deem him a pinnable guy.
Uh-huh.
When on Wednesday, they could have just had Orange Cassidy lose and make that point, but instead they're going to do it this way.
Yeah.
Like, just pin Orange Cassidy.
I know,
like, get this new heel group over, have the guts to do it. It's not going to kill anyone.
Yeah, nothing against the performance, but it's a couple of nothing matches there on 0 hour. And then the unification of the trios belts, something that, you know, however you feel about
get it over
the storyline's gone, they've invested a lot in it. The acclaimed Daddy Ass versus Bullet Club Gold. Who do you think leaves as the unified trios champions?
Bullet Club Gold. It was a nice thing to do as a proper, earnest three-man act to strap up the acclaimed at Wembley. Feels a million years ago, and I can't name a great trios match ever since. So give it to Bullet Club Gold. Juice will come back soon. They have at very least got patter. It could probably really help Ring of Honor and then be useful in AEW as and when you need it. I don't hate this, truthfully, but I kind of hate what's become of both the acclaimed and I never really liked the trio. I think they're 2 years late to the trios belts, truthfully. But like with the House of Black, certainly with the Elite and then, but with the House of Black, you had the opportunity to make something of it. And it's gone the opposite way with the acclaimed. Give it to Bullet Club Gold and try and restart it on a show that almost nobody watches. It's a safer landing for the belts.
I don't want the acclaimed to exist. I hate them. Like, genuinely, Max Caster, in his social media conduct, and some of his raps on television, where it all matters, I'm really put off. Absolute edgelord stuff. I do not need that energy in my life. Daddy Ass is a shark. A really boring old shark. And I just... Ultimately, I just feel sorry for Anthony Bones, who's got loads going for him.
Yes.
And he's never felt less like a star since getting over in the first place. Give it to the Bullet Club Gold, but I don't really care. I don't care about either act.
Yeah.
Like, Jay White has been stigmatized as a failure. I don't think that's necessarily all of his fault, but he hasn't been given a fair shake.
The only way I can see them giving it to the acclaimed and Daddy Ass is to then subsequently drop it to Shane Taylor promotion, because I quite like that as a trio. Anthony Ogogo, Lee Moriarty, Shane Taylor. So it's a temporary retention of the titles, I suppose. Or you could just have Billy Gunn smash them and stack them, all three of them. Might as well, eh? After what you did to Jay White and Dynamite. Anyway.
I'm beating up my kids for 40 years.
What?
Let's get to the main card, because we're really excited about the matches on here. And let's start with another trios match, just going in order of the way I'm looking at Wikipedia here. Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe versus the House of Black.
I mean, the House of Black are never... Will they ever beat the allegations, to use a phrase that people younger than me use? Will they ever beat the allegations of... Why won't a certain member of that unit work a singles match? And I know he did, but come on, he didn't really.
That was point-proven booking. And yeah. Didn't prove a point.
I think the House of Black, I always am incredibly impressed by their matches. I don't necessarily like the act or trust that it will go anywhere realistically. Maybe they could turn face. People have been wanting to cheer them for a long old bloody time.
They love Brody King.
They love Brody King. I mean, they love the act. They love the aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Hamflet went to Vegas last year. They were the most over thing on the Dynamite taping, at least.
So it was an Acclaim match that kind of killed it.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, absolutely. It was sobering, really. I like everyone in it to varying degrees. I mean, Kingston and Briscoe, I love them both, like, loads and loads. When this arrives, I'm not doing cartwheels over the prospect. I hope it's kept lean and brief. This would be my choice to open the show, but I've got a pretty good idea of what actually will open the show, and we'll get to that as we get to it. Do you care who wins or loses this match? Because I sure don't. I'm sure it'll be very, very good.
Yeah.
Not one bit, but Cope pins Buddy. Yeah. That's the finish. Well, the winner. I think they might have loads of fun, but there's your winner, there's your loser, I think.
Next up, FTW rules match for the FTW Championship, Hook versus Chris Jericho.
I won't go as far as to say that if this doesn't open the show, I will show my arse in Fenix window, right? But, and I don't know what goes on.
I want you to say that enough that eventually it ends up in the Christmas display.
Yeah.
All the kids are lined up and they pull the curtain back. It's a Sidgwick arse.
Sidgwick's ass. I haven't seen any messages exchanged between Tony Khan and Chris Jericho. But, like, you know when you see screenshots of messages and you really only see that when someone's taking their piss out of a mate to go viral or someone's done something reprehensible. And when they're trying to get what they want, one of the parties in these text messages, you often see afterwards, ha ha ha, like a nervous laugh, like, I'm trying to broach this subject, which is a little bit difficult, so I'm going to try and break the awkwardness by putting a hat or a ha-ha at the end, right? I just can see Chris Jericho, Tony Khan, WhatsApp. Maybe we should open with this, ha-ha. You know what I mean? I very well see him campaigning to get this to open the show. That was the trick in 2023, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. When the first instance of it going really badly for Jericho in terms of, well, the JAS was a good idea, it was only good on paper, the execution's not been good, not great, you've killed Eddie Kingston, thanks Chris, asshole. But it was like the tide was really starting to turn, and then Revolution last year, that was like, please stay away from Ricky Starks, he's just had that really cool mini program with MGF. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Chris Jericho's kind of caught wind of that and campaigned for him to be the opponent. We think, maybe it was all Tony Khan's idea. And it was all like, oh, no. Ricky Starks is getting dragged down by Chris Jericho. Maybe we should open with his hair. Because what opened Revolution, the match that people were most frightened of, because you wondered, could Ricky Starks emerge from this unscathed? And that match opened the show, and because whatever opens, you're like, oh, cool. The lights are on.
Yeah.
Everyone's come into the stands or excited about the matches. I've got my beer here. Okay, let's go. And it's like, oh, yeah. It's Chris Jericho. Yeah, cool. Anyone will do. I'm hyped up for the matches.
It's a great shout.
And I honestly think he's probably going to pitch going on first. Maybe for that express cynical reason.
And win.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he loses all the time. He's an absolute loser.
I think he wins.
Really?
I think he wins. I think he obnoxiously rebrands the title. It's an old bit.
GFY title.
Yeah. He might get something out of that.
And pay Earl Hebner some royalties for that one, though. Indeed, yeah. Came up with it first.
Bring him in. Tony, bring him in as a guest referee, huh?
So you're saying that in pinning him, Chris Jericho was going to make Hook look like a head in front of 10,000 people?
Yeah, pretty much. Dumas.
Dumas.
I also thought you were doing the Chris Jericho, ha ha ha. Him saying, oh, I reckon I should come back on Dynamite. Tony Khan's like, I'm not sure. Public opinion's not great at you right now. I think you might get booed out of the building. What if you just left Judas playing? Ha ha
ha. That Limmy sketch where I was like, what if I started doing this? And he's putting the hat on. It's like Chris Jericho. Like, what if I was Lionheart for a bit and then I started doing this?
And another one as well. It's like, yeah, we're not sure about the reactions you're going to get in the wake of everything that happened on Christmas Day. So maybe we shouldn't put you in a match in front of fans. Did backstage brawls with no fans. And that was the Battle of the Belts one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Play my music throughout the running.
Yeah. No one will boo Judas.
Hook, isn't when's Hook's contract run out?
Don't know.
That later on this year. I think you might be right. I think Jericho might be going over here.
Like
TFY title's such a shout.
The camera on Taz's face showing absolute disgust when Jericho's holding that belt as well after what happened on Dynamite. And get something out of that, can't they? Like, that's Taz's belt. And at least it was on his kid. And now this complete arsehole who doesn't warrant it, deserve it, or have anything to do with it is now carrying it around.
FTW tour for Fozzy.
Yeah.
Guess what, telly night, I suppose.
Fozzy the world.
It is impossible to analyze or wish to discuss anything pertaining to the fictional character Chris Jericho, because everyone that I see is sick to the back teeth. And yes, I know it's a bubble, but it's a little sort of exercise. Every time Chris Jericho gets announced for Dynamite or whatever, or, you know, the AEW tweet about, oh, you know, it's Jericho versus Hook at Dynasty or whatever, every reply is go away. Every single reply is don't need this.
Go away.
Go away. AEW has outlived Chris Jericho. There's not a single sentiment I see online. And I know it's curated. And I know it's itself a bubble that a lot of people go on Twitter just to express their disgust with the world because they don't feel like they feel like they've been wronged with it. Yeah. I know how social media works, right? But I haven't seen a single sentiment either in my replies, the people I follow, and the For You tab with people I don't necessarily follow, or like a quote tweet saying, are you insane? This match is going to suck. Anywhere going, oh man, only two more sleeps before Jericho versus Hook 2.
Yeah, I hope they get to this because they've only got the meeting between Taz and Hook.
Hope this gets enough time. I hope this gets enough time. It doesn't. You know what? No one.
Yeah.
No.
That I've seen anyway.
Hey, hey, Chris, I'm getting a bit concerned. A lot of people, you know, talking about this Jericho vortex kind of thing. What if we trademarked it?
You can't even, like, it's not, it doesn't have to be a Fozzy tour. You could just go home. It's an election year, isn't it? You can just go on the campaign trail with his wife. Like, there'll be lots to do. Lots of door knocking. Lots of canvassing.
Anyway, I hope you like title matches. I've got six more for you. next up, Roderick Strong.
He's too many. He's doing a bit, but it's too many. It's too many belts.
He's going to put people off by being this glib.
Sure
but,
is.
But
they're going to blame us. They're going to say, oh, then whinging bastard yet again. It's him, really. Yeah. Right, it's this guy.
Okay.
All right, wanker me.
Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly for the International Championship.
Yeah, I don't think Kyle O'Reilly's winning the belt, so I think we're going to get a TV-esque finish, which on a pay-per-view is never great. Again, this just feels underdeveloped. A lot of the Kyle O'Reilly stuff has happened on Collision. Is it fair that, you know, I'm a little bit like, oh, it doesn't feel like they've done much with it? They have. They've put it on their national television program. But at the same time, it just feels like Collision increasingly feels like the dumping ground for the stuff that Khan doesn't believe in quite as much.
Yeah.
If you want to be more generous with that and less cynical, and maybe I should be from time to time, you could say, well, Collision is for the sickos. Collision is for the ones who will really love Roderick Strong, where realistically, he's not necessarily the most charismatic force of nature on a Dynamite, which is the most viewed show or whatever. Maybe, if anything, it means you can interpret things that go on Collision as the stuff that Tony Khan really believes in but doesn't think have got the greatest amount of mass appeal. Either way, it does feel lesser than because it's been primarily like unfolding on the lesser seen show. Kyle O'Reilly's looked good since coming back. Not amazing. Not back, but really good. And Roderick Strong in what I hope is a maximum of a 14-minute match. I would go 12. A 12-minute, urgent, violent, very, very wince-inducing sprint. I've got no reservations over the match quality whatsoever. I don't think Kyle O'Reilly wins. Certainly it would feel like, it doesn't feel like he's been betrayed by, if you look at the ostensible stakes here, it doesn't really feel like he's been betrayed by a long-standing friend in really heart-wrenching fashion, and that collectively the AEW fan base is just desperate for Kyle O'Reilly to get a measure of revenge if again, like, on the back of this heartbreak and sort of, what's the word, betrayal.
Mm.
I don't feel like that, does it? I didn't know
it happened. They hit it on Battle of the Belts.
That's the thing. That's even lesser than Collision.
Mm.
It just feels like yet another example of, you know what, in the hopeful 12 minutes that this lasts, and even that feels long, this will be great on the night, but my investment in it is lacking.
It wasn't exposition heavy, but the gist was, Kyle O'Reilly comes back, Roderick Strong is very much, join us or we'll beat you up. And he was like, I don't want to join you. So they beat him up. That's like, that's the crack, isn't it? Like, that's pretty much the deal. When this pay-per-view was announced, a lot of people drew a line between the name of it and the name of MJF's stable in MLW with Richard Holiday. Dynasty, I think.
Mm.
This isn't like the most mid-card setting for a surprise, like last second from last, like huge pop, makes a save when then he's been King Rabbit. Adam Cole does his shock face.
First of all, Adam Cole's been taken off the road because who could have seen this coming? It's impeding his progress from recovering from injury.
Yeah.
This Undisputed Kingdom thing.
We know Tony Khan likes his black and gold. He watched Adam Cole half killing himself in 2019 and thought, oh, so you can just go.
God, I know. I've ranted enough about that. But it feels so, like, reduced now. Mm. Ever since Wardlow got jobbed out against Joe in really quite definitive, unceremonious fashion. I know. But not here. Not with this match. It just feels like, I would show my arse in Phoenix window if MGF comes back as part of this.
They're not dropping hints or anything.
Hints. Put it this way, I would think less of MGF as a political operator if he was asked /told, oh, can you come in and beat up Roddy Strong here? If I'm MGF, I'm saying, nee chance.
Yeah. Mm.
That's not red carpet treatment. I want hinted at. I want to build some anticipation.
Yes, yeah.
Or at the very least, I want to come in and disrupt a huge, huge angle. MGF's too savvy to even accept it, even if he's told. But then again, how many times have we read or heard reports of, or someone on a very small level wanted to do this on Dynamite? I was told to do this on Dynamite. Turned around and went, no. And then Tony Khan went, okay, whatever you sound, sounds great.
I think you're right. I think Wardlow interferes to help Roddy retain, and eventually Kyle O'Reilly's like, I've been through this before, and he eventually separates Wardlow from the group. They go camping to do a couple of 12-ounce curls.
He's learned. Yeah.
Let's move on.
Should be Kyle O'Reilly lore is that he sees a turn coming, or is it that just the Von Wagner was too thick?
The best version of this match is incredible.
Oh, absolutely.
The best version of this match is incredible. But then you're going to, you can't make me eat my words. I'll refuse. I will say I'm full. But it's the kind of thing where you can imagine people going to, we're excited about this one. See? And it's like, you know, two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah.
They could have done a pretty mediocre job with a build, and then the great wrestlers have a great wrestling match. You know, it feels like
it was insufferable last summer.
Oh,
it was
my God.
Every Monday following a pay-per-view. Where the naysayers today, we weren't naysaying that like two of the best wrestlers in the world are going to have a class match.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know that arsehole.
Danielson, Ospreay was great. Why are people surprised? Why did people think it was going to be bad? Oh, Pitt, suck my cack.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort,
so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's move on to Kazuchika Okada versus Pac for the Continental Championship. We're simultaneously really excited, you and I, Sid.
Yes.
We talked about this a lot recently and a little bit scared.
This is where, when people say, are you too miserable for your own good? I get it, right? I'm earnestly, when I can imagine sitting down on my couch, middle of the night, okay, let's go, put on Dynasty, whatever, right? There'll be some matches where the wrestlers will make their entrances and I'll go, all right, okay, show me what you get, sort of thing. I'm not that interested in the build, but let's go. When Pac and Okada make their entrances, that's when I'll inch closer to the edge of my seat, rapt attention, because I think, well, it's more because I've been really incredibly impressed, as of most people, with the way in which Okada has just taken to US TV, just the amount of thought that has been put behind his presentation.
He's only been topped in 2024 by the friggin' Rock.
Yeah, I know.
That's how high the bar is.
Loved Okada's AEW run. I can't take my eyes off him. If he's not killing dudes with rainmakers, he's just being really funny in a mischievous way, or he's emoting his ass off. I'm banging to Okada. This is like the inverse of my thoughts on a lot of the other matches and that. I'm emotionally invested in this. I'm high as hell on Okada. I find him a wonderfully entertaining guy to watch. I believe in him. I think he's been presented as the real deal, this invincible living legend. And Pac, and he's great, and it helps enormously that he's been a sporadic presence, so you forget how great he is, and you don't get normalized to how great he is. I must be the only person on earth who has expressed this thought. And I've said it before, but I need to say it again because now's the actual time I should have said it. They have a tendency, each wrestler, Pac and Okada, in several of the matches I've seen, I also think they're amazing more often than not, but I've seen matches between Pac and other people, and Okada and other wrestlers, where they stay in a low gear. I don't drive. They stay in a low gear a little bit too long, and they can sort of be affected by the pacing of the matches, particularly Okada, because he's been so trained to go 25 to 40. Sometimes when it gets to 10 and he's going 20, it's like, this should have picked up a little bit by now. That's my only concern. They're both incredible. I've got a fantasy booking spot. And they're both amazing. I'll tell you the fantasy spooking spot imminently.
Spooky spot.
I just worry that they're going to stay in that low gear too long. Their worst impulses might rub off on one another on the night. I want to see Carter get the arm of Pac, throw him back around, lunge, rainmaker. Pac does the front flip out that he did for the... that he did for the Kreutz Wrath All In 2019. That should be the, oh my God, this is an amazing match moment. I'm an arsehole. The match I'm most looking forward to, I think, in terms of my emotional investment, I think it's gone a little bit unstated that pacing-wise, this has a potential slog feeling to the opening half.
You put this on early to keep it as far away from Danielson Ospreay as possible.
You should open with it, really, for that exact purpose, Wilborn.
It's very much like when you...
But Chris Jericho will open the show.
When WWE have got two world titles and or like two chambers or whatever, and your opener and main event is the best place for both. Because not that they don't have their own merits, but they are the two best matches on paper, and the point Sid was making in the intro of this podcast about the pacing, typically something suffers. And if something has to suffer, you don't want it to sort of like, you don't want these great wrestlers to be tarnished with the kind of the brush of the AEW pay-per-view funk rather than anything they're doing wrong. I've seen wrestlers trying to wrestle their way out of it. Danielson, Jericho, the first time springs to mind. It's like, they're just not getting there. Crowd are tired. They're not getting there.
It was right quite
there.
Arrogant that I recall, if I recall correctly, they were like, we'll just go out there and call it in the ring.
We'll get them.
We'll get them. And then they just kind of had no idea how to actually do it on the night.
And like, I don't want that to happen to these two because I share Sidgwick's concerns about it. I think it will be great. I like them reminding me at least because I forget this rule. It's a good rule about the no interference. The books can't help. Now, of course, they can bend the rules a little bit because they're the books, but I don't think they will.
No.
I think the trick here is like a... one of those ref bumps where the ref is just temporarily, like, goes to the corner to, like, sort of shake it off a little bit and then comes back around. And it's something as simple. You've seen them go through the gears. Slow start, but maybe only over a 2-3 minute period rather than a 10-minute one. And then you see Okada having to remember, I'm class at this, to keep up with Pac. Because he can, and he can do that believably as a heel. But they're working through it. And then you don't sort of throw away like the Black Arrow or the Brutalizer on something that Okada just gets to escape because that's a waste. But Pac like does say like a springboard, and while the referee's shaking, just a massive hoof in the dick, like and then like Pac selling, and then the Rainmaker along the lines of the one we saw on Dynamite that just takes Pac's head off, and like again a gutsy, well, you just beat Pac. Like Okada can be this aloof, somewhat of a cowardly figure, like. Moneyed now and kind of over it, over the spirit of competition. But when he absolutely has to, he's still Kazuchika Okada because you keep that there for when he turns babyface as well. Mm. So you need these big wins. He's just starting a title reign. He's obviously going to win. But I think that's a way that everybody wins. Pac is low-key one of the guys that protects himself when he loses.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. He doesn't just say, yes, boss, pin me, pay me, that sort of thing. So he'll want the finish to work for him too, brother. And that's not a bad thing.
They might have put it in plain sight with the ring bell hammer as well.
Yep.
I know they've done the belt chair shot with Pac recently as well.
I've got another idea for a spot. I don't know how it works because when he usually does the drop kick, that incredible drop kick, which is always done at the exact right time for like the dramatic effect of it. It's like when they are horizontal in the ring. Mm. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Not diagonal, right? But Pac is so amazing at this bump that I just, whenever he does that, I think it's physically impossible to do that bump. How do you do it? It's, you know, when he just throws himself backwards into the turnbuckles, like when Kenny Omega's done a few kicks, he just launches himself back into the turnbuckles, like he's getting sucked into the turbine of like an aeroplane propeller.
He'd take the best buckle bomb ever, wouldn't he?
Yes.
From halfway across the ring. Right there.
What if Okada does a diagonal drop kick and Pac does that bump at that moment?
Like that as well. But we all think Okada retains.
Yes, he should hold on to that title for a long, old time. Hopefully unify it with one of the others. That's what I would do. At some point, they should really start thinking about that. Yeah. It's like another one of those... AEW's kind of messy every which way. There's too many titles. Mm. There are too many wrestlers. There are too many concurrent storylines. Probably at this point, too many concurrent working relationships. It's just an excessive promotion every single which way. I think if you can start tightening everything up, people will feel more like it's a world they would want to visit. I would unify titles deeper this year. That's a completely incidental point. Mm. Naive dreaming, but that's what I would do. I'd also cancel Collision and Rampage. Actually, you know what? I would have an extra hour. Uh-huh. Late 2021. Yeah.
3-hour Dynamite.
Shut up, man. I would rebrand Rampage, but have another 1-hour show and just scrap Collision. I want it to feel premium.
If you're going to rebrand an AEW, what do you guys want to call an AEW third hour, for example? I
mean, AEW Fuse is still right there. Fuse and Dynamite go together, and just a thought anyway.
It's not on the theme now, is it? It's like, where did it go? Fuse.
Just repurpose the Fuse?
Yeah. Repurpose the Fuse.
Just repurpose the Fuse.
The TBS Championship is on the line. House rules, of course. Julia Hart versus Willow Nightingale. Mercedes Moné sort of floating around all this as well. What do you see happening?
What? I just drifted off.
I was just thinking about how I forget sometimes the house rules are still a thing, considering it's one of the stupidest things that wrestling's ever conceived.
Julia Hart, Willow Nightingale with Mercedes Moné, obviously awaiting the winner at Double or Nothing.
What does Willow pick? Willow, I think weapons, gimmicks and weapons. Willow's done this thing lately where she's like, she's been in more...
Is it definitely under house rules?
Well, that's what Wikipedia says, so I'll double check.
She makes it no DQ because she's like had these matches where like these kind of gutted
Like tag team street fights?
Yeah, like the street fights. So that's Willow's sort of background. It means you can allow for cheating if Julia's got a retain. Maybe Mercedes Moné swings the chair and hits Willow. And that's how Julia retains, because she didn't get to swing it on Dynamite. And then you build that like, but I'm okay that I hit you because I know it was you, even though realistically, of course, it was Chris Statlander.
Yes.
Like, but that's Mercedes has cost Willow, and that gives you your first proper big Mercedes Moné match because she's cracked her in the heat with the chair.
Who do you think wins this?
Did you do your research? Is it definitely house
rules? I can't
rules?
Find any anything that says it's house rules.
That's the assumption.
Yeah.
Look, there might be, I don't know, Julia Hart is apparently injured, suffering from a shoulder complaint, which might explain the finish of Dynamite and the way that match played out. And it might have been convenient that they've done a mystery attack angle. Or it could have just been driven by the mystery attack angle and the shoulders holding up just nicely. And she could have worked if she was asked. Who the hell knows about the injury, the extent of it? Who knows what the house rules are going to be? All I know is I'm for sure that it's going to be a Willow Nightingale victory.
Victory? She wins the belt.
Mercedes Moné is going to wrestle her because that's
the match.
They've developed that thread more than they have Mercedes Moné versus Julia Hart, even though they've like
the belt is an inevitability, so you've got to
And they have made some attempt to by having Mercedes interact with both Julia Hart and Willow Nightingale on television so far. They've made an attempt of it not being quite a formality, but I think it'll be Willow. But then again, you know, AEW isn't stupid. They can be like, they can do stupid things, but, and they can have nightmares and they can execute ideas badly. But I don't think it's an inherently stupid organization. Asking fans to boo Willow and embrace Mercedes as their savior, it feels like a stupid move.
Yeah.
Basically, what I'm saying is that I don't know if this match is going to be glorified angle on the back of an injury. And I'm not convinced of the result, even though I'm leaning heavily towards Willow Nightingale. Maybe my investment is, they can't be that stupid to do it this way. I just think Mercedes versus Willow is a bad idea.
And I think it is right now.
It's yet more split in the crowd. Who do you like more?
Yeah. Mm.
And they'd be doing that so often. Osprey Danielson is splitting the crowd, really. Mm. They could have been, as much as I'm into Osprey Danielson, and we'll get to it, how could you not be, right? If you think about what they could have done otherwise, you could have just built a horrible heel, a dickhead heel, to go after Osprey and build him in a completely different way. Mm. Joe and Swerve, just two cool tweener guys. With Willow and Mercedes, if this ends up happening, you've got your hot new star that everyone wants to see in the new context against someone who is just so likable that no one would ever boo her.
That's why I thought Julia Hart would retain.
Yeah,
Mercedes would beat Julia for the belt because it's a simple...
But with the way AEW signpost things, whose promo did Mercedes interrupt when she said, I'll be wrestling a Double or Nothing? It's just what they do. Mm. Again, why?
I've got some good news for you. Just looking, trying to look for this, if it's house rules or not. It's just been confirmed in Wrestling Observer newsletter. The show will be 4 hours, 9 matches on the main card. No more to be added, according to Wrestling Observer.
Good.
And if
anything, you could take Jericho and Hook off.
Tomorrow on Rampage, it's just been announced.
I've seen this.
Elimination 4-way. Lee Johnson, Isaiah Cassidy, Commander, and RVD on 420, Sig.
Stand already.
Oh.
Let's talk about this ladder match, the tournament final for the vacant AEW World Tag Team titles. It's the Young Bucks versus FTR. I've got a sort of two-part question for you, Sig. Who do you think wins, obviously?
Young Bucks.
And will Jack Perry make an appearance?
I hope so.
Cool.
AEW needs a goddamn heel. AEW's got the babyface. It's got Will Ospreay. And yes, it's got Okada as the heel, but Okada's got one of the 12 belts. And he's not yet the main eventer. You'd expect that to be a plan for him to turn at some point, and then he could go in that world title picture, at which point. They do not have a main event heel.
Mm-hmm.
They do not. And I'm not saying Jack Perry is. And, you know, there's only so far you can get him over on the back of another wrestler who no longer is employed there, CM Punk. But ultimately, I haven't seen an AEW heel get a reaction like Perry did, albeit in Chicago. The extent to which all of this is situational is, you know, up for debate, and we'll only see how long you can really be the guy who got his ass kicked by CM Punk and further ruined the vibe in AEW. If you can be a heel for that long, it's a one shot, double or nothing. He feels like an interloper. He's got a notoriety. We know he can deliver in a big match because, for all the talk of him, you know, not being a main eventer, first of all, very few people are. Mm-hmm. Second of all, like, he's been in so many great matches, Jack Perry, and I think people have lost sight of that, and I think it's unfair on the lad. Basically, Swerve needs someone at Double or Nothing.
It's only 5 weeks after the Dynasty as well, Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe it's a state of, you know, maybe it's an indictment of the state of AEW and its ability to build big main event heels or talents slash general. But I wouldn't hate that. I would have him come out and interfere and join the Elite.
Mm.
Because that way you can have Paige, Omega, and another tag team. I don't know who it is, but like, imagine picking those spots. Probably Ibushi and something. You know what I mean? Probably Ibushi getting rushed back. If Kota Ibushi comes back and looks like he did in 2018, okay, let's go. But you know what I mean? He isn't.
God damn it, Kenny.
I know. Ibushi and Jericho, the Golden Jets.
Oh,
jet,
God.
The Golden Jet Lovers. The Golden Lover Jets. Anyway, back to this match that I'm really excited about. I got something to goddamn say.
Go on.
Okay. I have always had, since day one-ish, all right, okay, you've given us
the most viewed bit of the podcast where it goes up like that.
Gonna change the world, are you? All right, show me it. That's the thing. It's like, well, I need this. Please be good. Yeah. This is like a pipe dream, a unicorn. I want this to be good.
It did.
And then Cody and Dustin was like, and I watched Cody and Dustin, and my thoughts in AEW were, okay, let's go. And I really enjoyed it. Right, okay. And since day one, maybe between Full Gear and the Homecoming show in late 2019, I was a little bit nice. Mm. But other than that, it's always been, right, okay, you're capable of reaching these goddamn heights. Reach them all the time. For time of memoriam. Probably unfair. I'm being a little bit less strict. This FTR Young Bucks, realistically, is it? I can understand why the first match was divisive and how much better it might have played had it been in front of 10,000 people losing their minds, okay? But then again, other pandemic matches got loads of praise, so, and there was latitude extended towards it at the time. I personally, it's one of those matches where the first meeting between the Bucks and FTR, I personally loved it. At the same time, when other people told me their complaints about it, I was like, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I didn't think it was this uniformly classic match. Certain matches where it's like, well, you don't get that. You've got bad taste. Or you're just wrong. Mm. You know what I mean? I didn't get that with Bucks FTR. I was like, I get why people didn't like it. I happen to love it. The second match was an absolutely incredible tag team wrestling match. An absolutely incredible televised tag team wrestling match. I just don't think you can like wrestling that much or that style if you didn't like that. The last 5 minutes of the All In match, everyone was going absolutely mental. The last 5 minutes. It took them a while to get there. Mm-hmm. But there was magic in the last 5 minutes. I don't know. I just think people are a little bit too harsh on this dynamic, personally. Maybe the expectations were so high.
That's what it is. They told you outright, we're going to be the best tag team. Like,
rejoice.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think that, on balance, they don't deserve as much cynicism as they're getting heading into this. I can understand. And again, it's everything has to be embellished. Everything has to be absolutely sort of extreme one way or the other, hyperbole, recency bias, whatever. It's the hot take.
It's the feud that allows both sides of the Punk Elite culture war to be hit.
Yeah, I know.
Like, the people can be like, I hate that feud. Like, I'm a Punk guy. Like, his boys are in it. Yeah, but so are the Bucks. And then you get the example. Yeah. Like, you'd never get it with Punk and Omega. You notice whenever there's conversation about that, it's like, shook hands, man. He was saving the dog. They could have a great match.
Yeah. But
these teams seem to be the lightning rods for the two sides. Like, most sort of fiery hatred.
I think the graft that they've done together, and if you look at the way they've built the interactions in the various spots in the 450 and how they've subverted it, people go on like this is crap, and it doesn't have to be one way or the other. It could just be really, 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 really good stuff that's never quite reached its potential. It doesn't have to be boring or crap, and I just think it's they've grafted their arse off. They've really tried hard to put in like lots of like a continuing story that's unfolded across the three matches. Maybe time will be kinder to it. I don't know. All I know is that I think this match is going to be incredible. I think that more people should be, I don't know, less arsey about it. And I know that's me saying it, and listen to the 40 minutes. But for this match specifically, I just think that it's got way, way more potential than a lot of people. This is even getting, as far as I can see, again, everyone's opinion of the IWC or the way in which it's a hive mind or whatever changes from follower to follower to follower count to follower count. I see so much cynicism about this. And I think, oh, eh. I mean, come on, people are acting like it's Juice and Domino going up against like Animal and Heidenreich. Yeah. You don't have to go that extreme. I know some of people do it for the laughs, but I think there's a really unwarranted level of cynicism about the history between the two teams and the program. In terms of in-ring, I've been bored rigid by the on-off weird cryptic elements of this feud on screen and off. In terms of match quality, I think people have been way too cynical about it personally.
Shoe law?
I think they're going to invert it, and it's going to be like they're going to work one of FTR's ankles, so the boot's going to have to come off, and then it's harder to climb the ladder. Like they'll work, and so the boot's come off, it's a Young Bucks title match. Where's this going?
Yeah.
And then when Jack Perry does rock up to push somebody off a ladder, it's because.
Oh, yeah, like, is it going to just be the usual FTR both climbing the ladder? It always appeared as a goat.
Dax ain't no painter and decorator, but I guess I'm going to have to climb a ladder, and then with his boot off or something.
Potential literal escalation here. Cash Wheeler could do a 450 off a ladder.
Yep.
And I know he's kind of abused the idea of, oh, we don't do flips and dives. We are FTR, God damn it. We wrestle just like we're in that old Greensboro Coliseum. Yeah,
kind of forgot that.
Or the Omni. One of the two. I still think, because I think it's a whole load of crap, this whole FTR old school. They build to these incredibly, like, vaguely cinematic sequences. In dramatic beats, like a modern epic.
Yeah.
They just have the aesthetic and wonderfully the body types.
So it fools you into not thinking they're going to do it. And then when they do, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah,
that was always the trick.
That was always the trick. I think people have worked it out. I still think that there's just enough of the patina of that act that if... Shut up, man. If Cash Wheeler does a 450 off a ladder, it will still feel like him doing that off that. Everyone goes crazy.
I'm pretty hyped for this.
My point for the past 5 minutes.
Similar to Sidgwick's like point about the criticism towards the dynamic. We all know, probably, why a ladder was added. And I also know that there's an excess of ladders in wrestling. And the sort of generic reaction is to go, oh, ladder stuff. But it's always case by case.
Yeah, that's a dumbass gimmick. Like, trying to make the people believe you get buried alive and come back.
Back in my day, we had a lightning bolt shoot through soil so my glove could come out. It'll get them thinking.
Is he dead? God, I hope he comes back. I might have to watch me some Raw to find out.
Why's the glove coming through the soil a brighter purple than the one that the dead man was wearing in the ring? Don't ask questions, just keep watching.
Must be all that electric flowing through it.
Never mind AEW in the mud. The dead man was in the mud that night. The ladder.
What now is it? Was it between somewhere between 1998 and 2005? Or 1990 and 1995. Which one? I was in the mud for a long amount of years.
We don't talk about extended periods of my career. It was a different time. What was he talking about?
FTR Young Bucks.
And ladder matches.
Jeff Hardy in a ladder match.
Oh, yes, sorry.
People believed in Jeff Hardy when a dead man had a ladder match.
Oh, kid.
Make yourself famous.
I'll make you famous.
DDP couldn't.
Send him my goddamn t-shirt.
How famous is this guy going to be? He makes himself famous. I make him famous. The guy's going to be, I don't know, Elvis Presley.
Couldn't help noticing the DDP's got quite the hot wife on Nitro. Make him love mine.
Mine's hotter than that.
Starship wrote a song about her after all. Ever walked into the sea to fight for that woman? Sorry, yeah. I think a lot is good for this. This is the time to this is a sensible escalation, even if it's because nobody wants to take a pin.
Yep.
Even if it's because Jack Perry pushing the ladder over is that kind of cool visual, he's back. I think it's going to make the match better. I think this is actually an answer to the critics who say, this is not delivering the way we wanted. Hoya ladder in there. I think this is a benefit, honestly.
Here's a question as an alternative to the typical lights off, lights on, or just...
Damn, man.
Scapegoat slides in and pushes the ladder. What if FTR gets to the top of the ladder, reach for the belts, and then you get raised up? And then it's revealed subsequently on Dynamite.
Scapegoat's on a whole thing backstage. Do you know what? It would play at the Young Bucks having power.
Yes,
it's not the dumbest thing. That's they're kind of controlling everything, aren't they? So I don't hate that. It's funny.
Funny.
What the hell?
Actually, I was doing that. Cut backstage, and then there's the rope, but it's in a goat's mouth. And there he is.
Completed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dax, your arms are too short to box with God to reach the belt.
What's next on the program?
The AEW Women's World Championship Timeless, Toni Storm versus Thunder Rosa. Can Thunder Rosa dethrone Toni Storm?
No, but she won't. I'm interested in the old Rosita here. Mm. You see that on Dynamite the other week?
Which bit though?
There was I can't remember the specific Dynamite or what match. It was basically Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm were getting physical, and there was very much a receipt got thrown. And
remember the press conference?
Yeah.
Thunder says she's injured. Okay.
All
right, Toni.
Whoa. It would seem, it's been reported in fact, that there is genuine heat between these two wrestlers. Come on, let's hit each other really hard. Come on, I want to see some bombs thrown.
She's going to drag her to hell, didn't she?
Yeah, Thunder Rose has been really good in this build. Good promo. Not into it at all. I hope we get that vicious edge to Thunder Rose. Is this going awry? Mm. Some of the times it did. But some of the times it was just, she's so snug and she's so good, or at least used to be so good at conveying that I am in a fight tone. There's always this attendant drama with Thunder Rosa. It's like, is there full cooperation here or seats getting thrown? Look, it's not ideal if you're Toni Khan, but for me as a viewer, if I'm watching it, I'm thinking, is this thing going off the rails? It's got an added layer of drama. So I want this to be as snug as you can do it safely for me. Toni Storm to win.
Mm-hmm. And you get a great visual, I suppose, if you get the right picture of black and white Toni Storm, but with blood smeared across her face that's red. Something like that, I don't know. But yeah, I agree, Thunder Rosa unfortunately doesn't win.
No, they might, I guess, fold the Deonna Purrazzo stuff into it, where she has one last crack to try and help. That goes awry, and then you move on with Thunder and Deonna. And again, I said this on Wednesday, it's not been that hot, really.
Yeah.
But the ideas are there. You are trying to spread things out now, and you're trying to create more programs. And theoretically, the more programs and fueds you create, the more chance you've got of more people getting over in the division. So good, keep progressing the way you're going. But I just don't think they're yet to quite find that light in a bottle. Maybe it's as simple as Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker returning, probably the most over in ring wrestler and the biggest star the division's ever had that could come back together at the same time. And that's that one little thing. But at the moment, it's still challenges for Toni Storm to beat, so she will win.
Two matches left.
Yeah.
Ospreay Danielson and the world title match. What do you think main events this year?
World title match, I think. I think if it's Swerve's moment and people sense it during the match, that they'll come up for it after a long, long show.
I have worked myself into thinking somehow AEW won't put the belt on Swerve and thus it will go on in the semi-main, which now it's done that a few times, people won't necessarily be suspicious of that in the build-up, and you just headline with this. It's that greatest match ever thing. Sometimes you get hoisted by your own petard there. I say that happened at Forbidden Door, a little injuries notwithstanding. Edge and Randy Orton were never going to have it. But this could, and it's a worthwhile thing to put in the last match. Sidgwick made a fantastic point that has killed my investment in Swerve winning the belt, which is two transitional champions. That's worse than one. And there was just some of the dialogue on, you watch enough wrestling, sometimes some of the dialogue gets you thinking. And some of the dialogue had me thinking they're going to actually have Swerve as part of the ongoing, never-ending Hangman Page for you to live Hangman Page's life and get so close, only to have it ripped away, and he's got more to do, just like Hangman Page did as a babyface, and then you don't have the problem of Swerve's immediate victory of, right, cool, when we're getting to Will Ospreay at Wembley. Mm. I'm starting to think that's they just have a bit of a dry summer of Samoa Joe's champion, a bully heel, and make him a heel as well. None of this tweener stuff. A bully heel that Ospreay has to dethrone at Wembley.
Two things. One, do you think Swerve versus Joe's going to be like really good?
Nope.
I don't have much faith
in
the match.
Just fine.
Have much faith in the match particularly, but it has to follow. I've not really been... I hope this Joe reign ends because I want the formality to end as much as Joe's reign in and of itself. I would say there are various times when he just looks the part. He's a great promo. This reign hasn't really done much for me, and I would argue that it's not really done much for AEW on the whole. I think Joe's ROH run was so goddamn legendary that I think there's a lot of sentimentality attached to this run now, because it's all about Joe and how he should have been booked by a competent North American major the whole time.
Tony Khan's dream to book Ring of Honor Samoa Joe.
Yeah. So I think that there's a lot of sentiment underpinning the praise I see for this reign, because in and of itself, it's not done much for AEW's business. It's been like one really good defense. People like the Dustin match, I guess. But the hit rate hasn't been high. The level of storytelling has just existed. It just feels like a transitional reign that's gone on too long. And I don't have much faith in the match. I don't. I would have stepped this up personally. But when you were talking about dialogue, they talked a lot about him being a choke artist. And I think maybe that's a bit of clever writing that I have not praised enough, because me and Hamlet have drawn different interpretations from it. He said that he's becoming Hangman Page in his obsession to get his spot. It's like the be careful what you wish for.
Because the spot's that as well.
It's like that sort of the ironic hell device. Choke artist, obviously he's got the chain, but at time of recording, there's no stip attached to it. What if Swerve beats some of the coquina?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's the finish I can see, certainly. And he's good at chokes, a choke artist. That's the kind of detail I expect of AEW. So if they do that, then I'll go a little bit like this, hands up on the podcast, and say it was a bit cleverer than I've given it credit for. But my emotional investment in this is lacking severely because it's basically two cool guys who are either heels or they are de facto baby faces who haven't really changed their behavior, but have simply had to play babyface because the fans have started to like them a great deal. Not that much. Not to a company reviving extent, but well enough where you might as well strap them.
I should point out, I want to see the visual of Swerve in the belt.
Yes.
That's never gone away. I just know that the feeling isn't as strong as it was in December.
I think they should have done it at Revolution.
Revolution was the
one. I understand why they did what they did with Hangman Page and what have you. I mean, I booked it better, but you know, let's not go on about that too much. But I do. It's now or never for Swerve for me, and I think it has to be now. Even it's one of those it's where be,
is it never though?
I don't like when people say it's now or never, because if you're meant to be a champion, you theoretically should have a good 18 months before fans get sick of you in the role.
Yeah,
12 maybe in modern times. Then again, if you're Gunther, is anyone asking him to drop the title? You should basically last more than a pay-per-view cycle of people going, should have done it 3 months ago or 2 months ago. It's like, well, how well-equipped or, you know, qualified are you for the role if after this amount of time people are saying, too late, don't give them it. People should be clamoring for it more. I just don't care. There's not a big need within the audience, in my opinion, to see Swerve win it. People should be absolutely gagging for it.
Who's he fighting at Double or Nothing? 5 weeks, he said. You got 5 weeks to pick a baby face. Pick a heel, sorry.
I gave your answer on the news this morning when we were talking
about There's no other heels? There's no other big heels?
Jack Perry.
People mentioned Christian Cage. And,
we were scrabbling around, weren't we, on a Q&A the other day.
He's the safe bet name, isn't he? Because the match will be good.
It furthers solidifies Swerve as a babyface, which I think they really need to do more of. Yes, people do Swerve's house, but he's not a babyface, really.
Nick Wayne Law.
Yeah. And if the annual tradition keeps up, you can kind of do a B-level thing because you've got Anarchy in the Arena. But the last thing Swerve Strickland needs at this point is something that feels lesser than on the same show.
And if this does go on semi-main, that'll be 3 pay-per-views in a row for the belt.
All right.
Well, let's talk about what could be the main event instead. Will Ospreay versus Bryan Danielson, the potential to be, well, it's not hyperbolic to say the greatest wrestling match ever.
It could be absolutely incredible, this. Absolutely incredible. I'm fascinated by what it looks like. Ospreay and Omega was better than I could have imagined, because that's just what geniuses do in there, and Kenny Omega is a genius. You kind of had an idea of what it would look like. It was actually a lot, is that fair? It's very different and a lot more violent and bloody than I thought.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as much of a look what we can do match. So maybe that's not the right comparison, but there's various dream matches where you have an idea of what it looks like. I don't know what this looks like, because Danielson doesn't work the kind of match that Ospreay had with Takeshita. Mm-hmm. He's very, very good. He's still an unbelievable athlete with probably the best amount of stamina ever, but he doesn't do these incredibly complex, intricate, fast athletic sequences. He measures that. This could surprise people, because what people forget about Ospreay, and maybe this is why they've booked this Danielson match so quickly. Well, one, because Danielson's winding his career down. But maybe it'll give you a different dimension to Ospreay, because, you know, in this sort of, in this day and age, people are goddamn stupid and impatient, and it's desperate to make controversies happen. They seen the tribal bloodline stance already saying, ah, Cody's not on the program yet. Have you not seen it?
No.
This pathetic attempt at a backlash, which is so transparent that it's never going to take off. But people are very quick to go, I'm bored of that, I'm bored of that, I'm bored of that. Instantly, after the Fletcher match, people were like, the back and forth banger from Ospreay, what else can he do? It's like, loads. But they've signed him for like at least, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
The hope is he can be their 10-year guy. People don't realise, or maybe people haven't seen enough of something like Ospreay's ZSJ. Not being funny, like, Ospreay's such an animal, such an unbelievable professional wrestler. And again, I'm kind of borrowing a Meltzer take here, but I thought he was right, so I'll put him over for saying it. There are times during those Ospreay-Zack Sabre Jr. matches, they've had several great ones over the years, where it's like sometimes you forget who's meant to be the best technical wrestler. Like, who's the specialist here? Who's like, because Ospreay can do that. This could be before basically every big match now does, you know, a near fall festival down the stretch. For 15 minutes, this could be so much more technical than people are expecting out of it. That's the route I would take, because Ospreay's better at that stuff than Danielson. Ospreay's better at doing technical stuff than Danielson at this stage is of doing like this athletic fireworks banger. So then again, it could be a completely different match that intersects their various qualities better than an idiot like me who doesn't wrestle could ever conceive of. It's one of these matches that's so great. I'm sorry, I will let you talk. That you feel like an idiot for what spot these two guys should do.
Yeah.
It's like, who do I think I am? I think it'll lean a lot more technical than people are expecting.
Here's a question. Do you think Ospreay loses this one to keep him further away from the title picture?
I can't decide.
You should.
Yeah, I would like him to lose. I think it's more credible for AEW bigger picture if he does lose.
Callous betrayal?
Yeah, it's already enough that I don't think we're in the bubble here that we're going, oh, there's the best wrestler, so the best wrestler should be the world champion. That's like, and Wembley's not till August.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already enough that that's happening. If you at least create the kayfabe barriers, then it gives a chance for that conversation to go away a bit. Like, we all know that's a thing, but we'll equally buy into the distraction that Ospreay has got to now go and deal with the Callis family. I'm thinking Anarchy in the Arena and Blood and Guts. Susan offers up Ospreay as a temporary member of the BCC to take on some sort of Callis family, whatever, plus heel, something like that. So this would allow for that. Like, Brian didn't ask for Callis's help, but he's won the match, and instead it's this trigger point of now, like you do Ospreay and Takeshita at Double or Nothing again, but this time the dynamic is much clearer between who's the heel, who's the face, or whatever, you know, the Anarchy in the Arena maybe. So I would have Danielson win, and I would have the turn, and then you start to like unblur the lines a little bit with Ospreay, but give him something to keep him busy over the summer till the inevitable swerve thing. In terms of the match, I think the template for some of it at least should be a one that gets a lot of play on these podcasts, which is Shawn Michaels showing Kurt Angle that he can wrestle Olympic style. Like, Ospreay doing that to Danielson, and then at like the 8 minute mark, Danielson busting
losing
out,
his head,
busting out a backflip or a sky twister press he's not used in nearly 20 years, just to do it, just to be like, hang on, kid, you know, like that. I've got that as well, and then the match just goes into them doing their whatever their best bits are. Then you get it, you know. I would like that, yeah, to tease that out of Danielson, something preposterous, because his career is winding down. So it's like, have I got some move in me that is double rotation? Let's find out. Yeah. You know, like the, and then we're really into getting into gear. You know,
I think it does a lot for the specific nature of the story that they're telling of who's the best. Well, I'm not only am I like, you know, the best athlete, but I can do the submission stuff better than you or whatever. But again, it will
getting over in Japan as well, isn't it?
Yes,
you didn't do it, Brian. You said yeah, you didn't.
It will allow. This had way more juice 2 weeks ago as well in terms of the story, but that's by the by. I love like the little petty digs and the little like alpha sort of mentality. That's been dropped, but that's it's annoying actually. But again, the idea of Ospreay, another 5-star banger, is it from Ospreay? Showing people a different dimension of his game can only be a good thing at this point, because the narrative of, I know you can only do this, it's just getting tiresome. Let's just show them what you can do. Show the best of British will.
Well, let us know your thoughts.
Blackpool Combat, bruv.
Of AEW.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Let us know your thoughts ahead of AEW Dynasty in the comment section below, or on X at WhatCultureWWE. Watch that. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilburn. Follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. As I said, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. We will be back on Monday to review AEW Dynasty. But for now, this has been the Dynasty Preview. My thanks to Hamlet Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.